Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and then talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
So today we are talking about the very best horror movie ever made, so says Empire Magazine. This is number one on their list. How do you
feel? I feel good. I feel a little bit like... at the end of Lord of the Rings, I've traveled all the way to Mordor. I've now cast the ring. I'm Frodo, and I've thrown the ring into the fires of what's it called? The
Mount Doom.
I've thrown it's in there, and suddenly Gollum's attacked me from behind.
Ooh, is he?
Oh, Gollum, you dirty rotten bastard!
He does something with a finger. I can't quite remember what it is.
Yeah, what does he do?
Where he bites one or sticks one up, or who knows?
So it pretty much feels like the end of an extremely long journey. We watched 50 of the best horror films ever made. However, we are on episode 68. So obviously we've taken some... Well, we've done the little side quests, haven't we?
We have, yeah.
That's what it is.
Side quests and subplots. You're playing a role-playing game. And
kinky.
GTA 5. And then you see a person on the side of the street and they say, I've got a side quest for you. We've done a few of those.
We've done 18 of those, it would seem.
Yeah.
Or maybe even more. So it feels good to have got there. I know we put it off for a while, getting to number one.
A month, really, because we did two honourable mentions and two dishonourable mentions.
Yeah, so it's like you just don't want it to end. It's like... Yeah. Oh no! It is like the end of Lord of the Rings when you have five different endings. Peter Jackson just didn't want to give up.
Yeah.
On it, he just went, I don't want to say goodbye to these guys.
Then he made the Hobbits. That's what we need to do. We need to go in.
That's what we need to get Martin Freeman in and say, look, mate, we've done our 50. Now we need some fresh meat to get into. So I don't really know what is the plan for a horror hangout after. Now we've watched the 50 top.
I don't know. I feel like maybe I want to carry on doing new releases every now and again, and maybe do deep dives. But I mean, having that list was a good sort of thing to work through. So maybe we need to look for other lists that we can sort of work through.
Maybe we need to look for lists. Maybe one thing I was thinking was perhaps we could do a few episodes, a themed month or something like that. So we watch.
Yeah.
Four from a certain director, four from a certain genre, four from... I mean, I know I suggested watching some video game
adaptations.
Adaptations, obviously, Resident Evil, Silent Hill. There is an Alone in the Dark film, which I think is notorious.
So
you know what I mean? Some of those might be moderately interesting to watch. Then again, we're going to have to do some classics that weren't on the list. There's a multitude of things we could do.
Yeah.
So we'll play it by ear for a while, but then we'll come up with some sort of solid plan.
We need a quest, is what we need.
We need a quest.
Yeah.
Well, there was a plan as well for us to write a book about the 50 films.
So before we get on to The Shining, is there any other, I know we just recorded the other Stephen King episode, is there any other gifts that you maybe forgotten about? Maybe
never forget about them. Well,
snuck out of there. TV shows.
Something I've watched that I probably need to discuss during our discussion of The Shining is I watched Room 237, the documentary, which is about a lot of theories to do with, it's a subjective documentary, explores various theories in The Shining and sort of these, there's a few voiceovers, various film clips that kind of, but it is pretty nuts. But yeah, I'll talk about that at some point when we get into the film. But that's pretty much me.
The only thing I can think a lingering sneaky guff was last night I couldn't sleep. I woke up about 2 o'clock and I was like, you know, you wake up, you're really hot and you're like bothering, you're like, I can't go back to sleep. I ended up putting Moonlight on San Amazon Prime. It won the Oscar last year or the year before or something.
Yeah.
And have you seen Moonlight? It's not a horror film. It's
Yeah, I've seen Moonlight.
It's sort of a A24 gangster drama about a young gay boy who grows up in the to be a gangbanger in a way.
Gay boy gangbanger.
Cat was sleeping next to me. I think she looked over. She woke up and looked over right during one of the sort of the gay bit. There's more than that. And she was like,
"You slammed your laptop lid down really quickly on your penis." Ow!
Yeah. That's like, yeah, I didn't know. It's not what it looks like. It's an Oscar winner.
I went to see Moonlight in New York. So
did you?
I went. Yeah. So yeah. One of the last days I was in New York, sort of Christmas into New Year 2016. I went. So Nighthawk Cinema, which is like a really sort of like retro. It's sort of adorned with loads of VHS Hawks. Covers outside. Yeah. Hawks. And I planned to go and watch a midnight showing of The Thing, which would have been on the 30th of December into my birthday, which is on New Year's Eve. What a way to celebrate it. And when we got there, it was sold out. They've got 12 seats, basically. It's just each screen's tiny. And I was like, well, what are we going to do? Like, we were sort of by Times Square. We went all the way to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And when we got there.
Is that not in New York? I don't know how it works.
Well, it's not on Manhattan Island, is it? Okay. It's off a bit. So it takes a little while, but not it wasn't too far. We were like, oh, we're here now. What should we watch? And the only other thing that was on was Moonlight, which I kind of knew a very small amount about.
Yeah.
But it's definitely one of those films that if you're watching it at midnight, like probably didn't get started till 12:30.
Yeah.
And after a day of like roaming around New York, I think about halfway.
Have you fallen asleep?
About halfway through, I was really starting to flag. I think I'd had a beer as well, so I was a bit like,
oh, yeah. Because it's sort of slow, it's like a slow sort of, there's bits when it's like in the waves and the water and it's kind of relaxing, calm waves. I imagine I would fall asleep so quickly. I don't like to drink too much before I get to watch films. Now, I remember going to watch years ago, we went for a few beers and then we went to watch Final Destination 3, which I think is the one with a roller coaster at the start. And the only seats we could get were right at the front row. And the screens, it was, I think it might be an IMAX. It felt really big anyway. And I was really drunk. And I was trying to keep my eyes on all the roller coasters zooming across the screen. It was like instant headache. It was like one of the worst headaches I've ever had in my life. And I had to sort of just not look at the screen for a bit. Yeah, but...
Final Destination 3. Maybe that's one to do for the future. A Final Destination film.
I like the first one. I think it's good.
Yeah. So back to Moonlight. So Mahershala Ali won Best Supporting Actor, didn't he? And he is in the new series of True Detective, which I think has been filmed.
I hope they go with like the Lovecraftian themes that they did in the first
series. Yeah, that would be nice. The second series is a bit more more straight and narrow, wouldn't it? Yeah, that would be cool. But looking forward to that because, you know, I think it's a very intriguing sort of show with a lot to give.
Only other thing, have you watched the new Matt Groening TV show on Netflix?
What's it called?
Disenchantment.
Disenchantment. Now, I haven't seen it yet, no, but I have seen some little.
Are you a fan of like Futurama and stuff like that?
Yeah. Not a huge fan of Futurama, but yeah.
So this show, once it finds its feet, in about 3 or 4 episodes in, it does have some. It is pretty funny. It's got loads of English people. It's got Matt Berry in it, Noel Fielding.
Oh, really?
Rich Fulcher doing voices. Good. Yeah. So it's cool that they're all kind of like mixed in there now. And Matt Berry obviously has like got one of the best voices ever. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's recognizable.
Yeah.
100%.
But that's about it. I think that's all the other guffs. All the other guffs cleaned out.
But mate, sometimes you know what? Sometimes you can't have that many guffs. Sometimes, you know, you got to just get on with it.
So let's get on with it. So number one on the list, The Shining. Do you want to tell us a bit about it first?
The Shining, as I like to.
Shining, yeah.
The Shining. So let me just. So The Shining is a 1980 horror film produced and directed by Stanley Kubrick. Co-written with novelist Dian Johnson, based on Stephen King's 1977 novel, The Shining. Didn't realize there are only 3 years between that adaptation. Now, that's crazy when you think about it, isn't it?
Well, between the film, the book coming out and the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a period of 10 years. I think Stephen King had a big movie coming out every year, which is like insane. It just never happened. But like there was Carrie, Dead Zone, all this stuff sort of flying out.
Yeah. Everything was getting pushed right out of the cinematic vagina.
Yeah.
A family heads to an isolated hotel for the winter where an evil spiritual presence influences the father into violence while his psychic son sees horrific forebodings from the past and of the future.
Yeah. Lovely. This is what Empire have to say. They've got a bit more of an essay on this one. Stephen King hates it, of course. Contemporary critics were lukewarm. Initial box office returns were middling. The Academy Awards flatly ignored it. Stanley Kubrick, unbelievably, was even nominated for a Worst Director Award at the inaugural Razzies. He lost to Xanadu's Robert Greenwald. It wasn't a fun shoot either, by all accounts. Kubrick forced Shelley Duvall to do 127 takes of one scene, a record according to the Guinness Book of Records. Jack Nicholson was made to eat his least favourite food, cheese sandwiches, to keep him in an agitated state. The infamous... The infamous Here's Johnny scene took 3 days and 60 doors. Both lead actors left the shoot exhausted and resentful. What a difference a bit of hindsight makes, though, as with a lot of Kubrick's work, time has been kind, and it now seems blindingly obvious that The Shining is a masterpiece without parallel. Precise, meticulous, surreal, visually astonishing, a shimmering study of a descent into madness, the ultimate horror movie. King continues to grumble, but it's his blind spot. His novel was too on the nose for directors... for this director's metaphysical sensibilities. The book is slashed cruelly but correctly into a leaner script. With Kubrick, it's always about reading between the lines, or in this case, the corridors. The imposing Overlook Hotel is a labyrinthine interiors built entirely in London's Elstree Studios, serve as the physical embodiment of Jack's psychological degeneration. The newly invented Steadicam gives it an extra geographical depth. We're nearly there. It might not be a conventional horror. Kubrick was hardly going to lump for genre tropes, was he? But the undercurrent of menace throughout is far scarier than any jump cut or shadowy ghoul. It's all about the bubbling sense of unease under the surface, an unease that could infect any one of us. Some places are like people, as Scatman Crothers Cook, Dick Halloran puts it. Some shine and some don't. And that's what they obviously gave it 5 out of 5. They obviously like this one.
Well. There we go. Yeah. I mean, that summed that up nicely. This has been Horror Hangout. It's been wonderful.
Yeah.
Great.
So it's only got 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, 8.4 on IMDb, which isn't too bad. But, you know, it's not a shining example there. But but yeah.
We don't know Jack.
What are your thoughts on The Shining? Is it one of your, is it your very favourite? Is it middling?
It's not my very favourite, but it's definitely up there. This is one of those films that I kind of always return to, one film that I kind of watch probably every couple of years. And it's just another one of those films that keeps on giving. You know, when a film, with each new watch, you kind of discover something new. And I've been watching a lot of kind of like behind-the-scenes footage. Just strange, because a lot of the behind-the-scenes footage I've seen, Jack Nicholson seems in a lovely, happy mood. For most of the time, and even Shelley Duvall. I mean, she has I didn't. Shelley Duvall has one sort of moment where she seems a bit annoyed, but also like Stanley Kubrick and Jack Nicholson have a really good relationship. There's a bit where Stanley Kubrick plays back filming him, and a great shot, and then Jack Nicholson helps him up afterwards, and they kind of have a little bit of an embrace. It just seems like a lovely shoot, but I guess we don't see all the everything that went along with it. And I know Stephen King isn't a fan. I mean, the novel is very different, but at the same time, as an adaptation, like, it's got to be different, hasn't it? It's got to be.
The thing,
like,
about that, things... the thing about it, because like Stephen King, there's like 100+ adaptations of his film. Why is he picking on this one? This is one of the good ones. There's so many shit adaptations. Like, have you seen the Langoliers? That's one of the worst things I think I've ever seen in my life. Like, so many bad. Like, why is he sort of got a thing in his?
Do you think it's because like people who make bad films of his material are like, he's mates of them, or like he's given the green light on it, and then they've made it as bad, and he's like, oh, there's nothing bad I can say. Whereas Stanley Kubrick was probably a bit more. You know what I mean? He's a maverick. He's a card. He's a very.
I do think so. Apparently, Stanley Kubrick. So Stephen King wrote the first drafts of the screenplay in his contracts that he stipulated that he was going to write the first draft. Apparently Stanley Kubrick just didn't read it, just like completely ignored it, because he said Stephen King's not a good writer, and he wrote the screenplay himself with so maybe it's that, maybe it's just like, because that's a bit
but at the same time, writing for screen is very different to writing prose, and I wouldn't necessarily say, like, I mean, I don't know every example of something Stephen King has written for screen, but obviously last episode we watched Sleepwalkers, which it was his script. And, you know, maybe some things just don't translate well to certain mediums. And Stanley Kubrick was probably thinking, I know what, it's his vision. He knows what film he wants to make. And I think if you do take on that sort of responsibility, even if it is an adaptation of someone else's work, like, you want control over it in some way. And obviously as a filmmaker, as a very experimental and, you know, out there filmmaker.
Stanley Kubrick's like kind of like incredibly precise as well. Like everything. He used to like develop his own lenses or something like that. He used to develop his own lenses because he couldn't, the technology just wasn't available yet. So he used to make it himself. Like he's so precise. And he produced this film. He wrote it, he directed it, he co-wrote it, he directed it.
Yeah.
They took 11 months on the screenplay. I imagine Stephen King probably bashed one out one afternoon.
I've got the screenplay. It is pretty much perfect.
Yeah.
So if you've got any arguments with it, then sorry to break it to you, but I'm going to change. It's one of those films that, like, there aren't many films that kind of do this to me, but in terms of the scares, it's more about the atmosphere and the setting rather than anything else. Like, I feel the same with, like, The Exorcist. There's just some weird lurking darkness beneath the surface that perhaps you don't always expressively see, but it's just something there. It's not always, sometimes it's a soundtrack. Sometimes it's just the dialogue. It's just, there's just an atmosphere there that something isn't right.
Yeah.
Something isn't right. And I don't want to be there. I don't want to be in that hotel. I don't want to be around these characters. It's just a weird sort of feeling. And I think that's why it's so.
That's the magic of the film, isn't it? Yeah.
That is the magic.
I was thinking about, like, where do you start with the tone of this film? Because it catches it so, like, if you think about Sleepwalkers, that didn't know what it was doing with the tone, not really. This film, like, it's so precise, like it's the track, the slow tracking shots, the whistling sort of piercing whine, even like the decoration in the hotel, like the carpet and the walls, it just all seems like the maze, the like little model of the maze sort of thing. It all works. It's so perfect and so unnerving.
It's just like it's a very unnerving, that's a good way of describing it, an unnerving, very slow, methodical descent into madness. And you start there knowing something isn't quite right. Mm. And then as soon as this descent into madness starts happening, you kind of get dragged along with it. Yeah. And you're there for every sort of horrible moment and horror. I mean, there are some horrific moments in this film, but just some of the really basic, there are some really horrific moments that are done so simply. Yeah. Like in certain films, I think I've mentioned before, I hate the way that soundtracks peak when something scary happens. Like there's none of that. There's almost absolutely none of it. As soon as something horrible is revealed, the soundtrack almost stays exactly the same, which in a way is even more unnerving because there's no audio change. There's no change in the tension comes from exactly what you're seeing, not from what you're hearing.
Have you seen Under the Skin? Have you seen that one?
Yeah. Watch Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the way the soundtrack works in that, where the horror, like, there sometimes isn't any music when she, like, drowns that kid or whatever it is on the beach. That just reminded me of that just then. This is also my first viewing of the film. I've not seen it as many times as you. I think this might be, like, the third time I've seen it. I just always put it off for some reason. But this is the first time I've viewed it with a kebab and a cider. And so I feel like it added something.
Oh, lovely.
To the film. Yeah.
Oh, what night you had.
Yeah, so it was interesting. It was interesting flavor, but like a bit of extra spice sort of viewing experience. We had garlic mayo. It was good.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Delicious.
Yeah, so the cast, people probably know already. Jack Nicholson plays Jack Torrance. Jack Nicholson's eyebrows play Jack Torrance's eyebrows very well. Shelley Duvall plays his wife, Wendy Torrance. Shelley Duvall, the first time I watched it, I was like, why is she so like shaky? Like, why can't she get through that window? Like, I don't understand. But now that I know there's like 127 takes or whatever it is, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
I bet she's just tired as hell. Like, she needs a Lucozade.
Exactly. Yeah. Needs a Lucozade.
Danny Lloyd plays a little kid called Danny. He does the creepy kid thing quite well. I don't think he also does like the little voice and the little finger thing. I don't know if he was doing that before and they were like, that's what we're looking for. I don't understand how he picked that up. And then Scatman Crothers, he plays the cook. He's also got the shining, the sort of telekinetic, telepsychic thingamajobby. And he doesn't once sing about how everybody wants to be a cat. So he does quite well in that role there. Yeah. Although every now and again, I couldn't once sort of realize that he was the guy who did the voice of the cat, the jazz cat in Arrested Cats. I couldn't stop thinking he was going to burst out into song at some point.
That would have been great.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So, I mean, how does it start? It's just a mountain scene, I think.
Yeah, so we get like a sort of helicopter shot of the sort of like the road. Is that how it opens? Is that how it opens, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. The road and the lovely countryside, mountain.
Lovely countryside. But then the soundtrack, again, eerie. Very sort of like eerie, synthy. It's not like, or is this the soundtrack at the start isn't orchestral? It's sort of like weird, sort of near, very synthesizer-y.
Yeah, is it? It's got like a. I've got my notes here. Bum 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 bum. Is it got a bit of a kind of? I feel like it does that a lot.
A bit of a bum. A bit of a bum bum to it.
It's got a couple of bum bums in there.
And there's sort of like these weird in the soundtrack as well. There's these weird like distant wails in the background, like. That's pretty much it. That looked really.
Yeah, ton of old fashioned kettles, like on the.
Exactly. That really gets to me as well. That's really like, oh, what is that? Like, there's something. Yeah. That's the thing. There's so much. It's the unknown in this film, which is so scary. Is that there's never really any explicit explanation to what's happening or what's going on. Is everything's just kind of hinted at, suggested. Everything's kind of like in the background, just like peering over Jack Torrance's shoulder, sort of almost like controlling him with these sort of invisible puppet strings.
Yeah, you can imagine, you can kind of picture there's some unseen entities just standing around him all the time. It's weird. So he goes for this job interview, which sounds insane. I mean, the guy is like, so the hotel was built on an ancient Indian burial ground. Say what? You'll be isolated for 5 months. Beg your pardon. A caretaker murdered his family. I'll go zero-hour contract. No, I'm out.
Zero-hour contract. Well, I do like that.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like a good job at all. I mean, I hope he's getting paid, all right? Would you do it?
Oh. I don't know. So obviously he kind of like thinks, he likes the idea of the solitude in the hotel because he's going to like, he's got some writing stuff he wants to do and he wants to just chill and bash it out, basically.
Yeah.
But, it doesn't sound like the most ideal job, but I guess if they're just going to be there for the winter, like they got the run of a huge, sort of really posh hotel. They don't have to worry about paying to eat because they can just eat all the food that's already there.
Yeah.
All that it is ideal, really. Because really, they're earning money, but there's no outgoings.
I would say I'd do it if there's Netflix or, you know, Google.
Yeah, if you could Netflix something. Yeah. Netflix. If you've got an internet connection, you'd be fine. But obviously, in 1980, afraid not.
No. I do think Jack Torrance, Jack Nicholson, plays. He's a bit too cool to be what I expect a writer, unless he's like an erotica writer. I don't know.
Maybe
he just.
So.
Yeah, he seems to. I don't know.
Is it ever hinted at what he writes? Because I think in the book he's writing a play, if I remember right. Okay.
He just said, I've got to outline a book, or I've got to break a book, or something like that. Nobody ever says what it is.
Obviously, with the film, Jack Torrance immediately seems a little bit, there's something a little bit not wrong with him, but he looks maybe a tiny bit unhinged, just a little bit. He's got the smile in the eyes. I mean, and that's just Jack Nicholson. But yeah, and I think in the book, I'm not going to make comparisons to the book throughout because obviously the book is very different. He's kind of like, in the book, he's kind of like the everyman. He's kind of seemed as like a nice guy. So his descent into madness seems almost even more shocking. Whereas with Jack Torrance, he seems like a man who's possibly on the edge of something, and all he needs is a little push.
Boop! All he needs is a little... Yeah, you did a good impression there. That was good.
Yeah.
I think this is the crazy... I've seen him play crazy many times, but I feel this... Like, even when he's like playing normal, like, he just seems slightly unhinged. It's something unnerving about it. He came into this... Man. He came into this, I think, pretty much straight out of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So maybe he was just in the mood.
There we go.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to be typecast, but I'm going to be.
I'm going to be a nutcake. So he gets the job. I think at the same time, Danny Torrance gets the first vision of the blood coming down the hallway.
Yeah, so he's kind of... Is he brushing his teeth? He's doing something in the bathroom, and he has the vision of a cascade of blood coming out of an elevator door. Yeah. Which I just keep. It looks delicious, Vimto or something like that.
Yeah, do you feel that was the first time that was used, that visual? Because I've seen it a few times now. I think it's in the new Outlast game, but I feel like this must be
a river of blood. You mean
like spilling through a house or a corridor or something? Yeah.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's got to be probably one of the first times, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then he gets visited by a doctor as well. Danny does at this point, like a pediatrician.
It's because of his finger.
Yeah, so he's got an imaginary friend named Tony.
Never explained Tony, his finger.
No. Again, sorry to mention the book. In the book, the imaginary friend is like a visual thing. He's somebody that he sees.
Right.
Okay. Where this is sort of more like he's got an imaginary friend he's talking to with his finger, and then for some reason, I don't know why she tells him, but Wendy tells the doctor, this is a bit like, this is too much information, but then I suppose she needs to, explains that Jack gave up drinking because he dislocated Danny's shoulder. He had a binge, he had too many WKDs, and then she says he used too much of his strength. That's an excuse for it. Yeah. Why did you dislocate your son's shoulder? Well, I used too much of the old strength, didn't I? And
it wasn't me. It was my strength that did it.
Yeah. Exactly. Do you plead guilty or not guilty? Well, it's more strength. Is that it?
Yeah. Okay. So they give the doctor, and then I think it cuts to the winter or something, right? It cuts through time a fair bit.
It cuts. And then they're arriving at the hotel, basically.
Okay.
They drive into the hotel, and obviously Danny's like going, I'm hungry. And Jack says, you should have eaten before we left, you little shit. I'll dislocate the other shoulder in a minute.
I used some of my strength.
I used some of my strength on you. So they arrive at the hotel on closing day, and they're basically given a tour by the manager of the hotel, and then like some other dude who just kind of like milling about with them.
Yeah.
seems really pissed off, this guy. And then the chef, so Dick Halloran, played by Scatman Crothers.
Yeah.
Basically shows Wendy and Danny around sort of like the kitchen area and the pantry, and says, look at all this. It was making me hungry, this bit, when he was showing them all the different.
I thought it looked really cool.
We got turkey. Yeah. We got lamb. We got it. I was like, oh, okay, mental.
And then he goes in the dry food store, and it's like, we got Pringles. We got...
we got Pringles, we got Rice Krispies. Yeah. We got the hula hoops, we got all that shit. Yeah. And then he turns to Danny, and Danny's like obviously looking at him, and without saying a word, telepathically he says, I bet you'd like a little bit of ice cream, wouldn't you?
That's weird. And it is weird. Danny, when I was watching
it,
I couldn't help but think how it would have been done in the book, but it's effective. I think it works really well. It's weird, like if you watch this for the first time, you think, what the fuck, what's going on? That's bizarre.
I think in the book, possibly, I may be wrong, but I think The Shining is sort of discussed and elaborated on a lot more. And I think a few things happen before Dick talks to him about it. Yeah. Well, of this, he kind of just immediately realizes and goes, I'm just going to chat to this 5-year-old kid about the fact he's got telepathic ability.
Yeah. He goes on about how you've got The Shining, I've got The Shining, we've all got The Shining, Hotel had The Shining, and Danny's like, weren't you King Louis from Jungle Book? And then he's like, no.
You see, that's exactly how it works. You recognise me.
Yeah. So, and The Shining, to communicate with other people with it, you can get visions of the future, visions of the past, and you can, I don't know, cheat.
Yeah,
on
he kind of explains that how he had a whole conversation with like his grandmother, Dick does, when he was younger. Just sat there, had a whole conversation with her without once opening their mouths. I just thought, pretty good ventriloquist, the pair of them.
yeah, I like it. So also, did you see that they're doing the sequel, Doctor Sleep? Ewan McGregor is going to play Danny Torrance.
Yes, I did see that. So a grown-up Danny Torrance.
Yeah.
Basically with his shine ability. It's basically fighting crime with his shine ability. I don't know. I've got that book, but I haven't actually read it.
I think they're like energy vampires, aren't they? Something that they're trying to get him. I've not seen that. I've not read it one. But it's meant to be quite good. It's meant to be all right. And it's going to be directed by Mike Flanagan, who did Gerald's Game.
Oh, wow. Very nice. Very cool.
Very nice. Yeah.
He loves a bit of Stephen King, doesn't he?
Yeah. So I think a month passes and then everyone's gone now and it's just them getting to know the hotel. Jack's working on his writing. I think, do we get the weird little maze? Like, it's kind of like a Hereditary. It's like they've ripped off Hereditary or something, where it's like a model of the maze, and it sort of slowly zooms in, and we see them running around in it.
Yeah, so obviously, just before the month later jumped, Dick did tell Danny to basically stay out of room 237. He's like, Danny's like, is there anything to be afraid of in the hotel? He's like, well, don't go to room 237, whatever you do, because... it basically stinks. Just stay away from there. And whatever you do, don't go in there. Yeah. So he goes, oh yeah. So yeah. So Jack's basically writing, but sort of not having much success. Danny and Wendy are like exploring.
Oh, he's always
the
on
hotel.
His bike, doing his Lance Armstrong training, like cycling around on his little tricycle thing.
Around in circles.
Yeah.
So then we do see the hedge, but they're walking through the hedge maze and there's a bit where Jack looks at a model of the hedge maze and then we see a sort of zoom out and we see tiny little versions of Wendy, which is a lovely sort of touch. It looked huge, the maze. I mean, I'm assuming the maze wasn't actually that big, supposedly, in the film.
Also, they get to the middle of the maze and it's like...
nothing there.
It's the same as the rest of the maze.
Yeah.
Where's the prize? Yeah.
Are you glad we got here to the center of the maze? Danny's like, yeah, it was great. It's just like, well, no. Want some sort of congratulations.
Sweet or something.
A sweetie. Yeah, exactly. Who would have left it there? You know,
Dick Halloran was there. Well,
I didn't leave all along. I've been here waiting for you for a whole month.
Here's that ice cream,
and I'm dead. So Wendy learns that the phone lines are down as well.
Yeah.
Due to the
snow and stuff.
Snowing shitloads. So she goes and speaks to the police on the radio and basically just tries to get few answers about it.
She's doing all the day jobs, I think. So he's writing. He was supposed to keeping the hotel in repair and stuff.
Yeah.
She seems to be doing it all.
I'm assuming they're going to split this salary or summer.
Yeah. Or summer.
because she's doing all the hard work and he's just mucking about. He's throwing a ball against the wall constantly. And that does look quite satisfying, doesn't it? Throwing the ball against the wall.
He does that thing where he's busy writing and I think she asks him a question like, where's the ricicles gone?
he
blows up at her like screaming about how I was in the flow then and you ruined it, and
I think she just comes and tells him that it's supposed to snow tomorrow and he's like, he just says something like, all right, what do you want me to do about it? And she's like, oh, I thought I'd just tell you. And he goes, well, the thing is, you come in here and you interrupt my flow. Luke's like, I completely understand that. He gets that every single day.
I watched The Cat and she was like, that literally happened the other day.
Oh shit.
Not quite, I mean.
Oh,
not
my
quite,
God. And then you axed her door.
Yeah.
Axed the bedroom door.
Yeah.
So obviously he loses that bit. So I think what we're kind of seeing here is that he's getting frustrated with his writing, but like these negative, almost violent outbursts. So like he's not being physically violent this time, but he does kind of slap himself on the head. He basically tells her he said, if he's in here, if he's in the room, if you hear me typing or if you don't hear whatever the fuck you fucking hear, he's just like losing his nut. Just stay out
of this, like, leave me alone, basically, when I'm working. Because obviously he's becoming frustrated. He's not getting much done. It would be nice to sort of know what he was, you know what I mean, what he was working on at this stage.
If you let him just have a quick look, like a little look.
Yeah, can we just have a little read of that, please, mate? Oh, fuck it, that's all the same words over and over again. Have you not noticed?
I'll let you read one line.
Yeah. I'll let you read just one line, and if you think it's bad, then just fuck off.
Yeah.
So we see,
where did it go after this?
We see a lot of Danny riding around on his little trike. And there's some great shots here, you know, obviously the tracking shots following him riding around the hotel. I think we get to see the scale of, like, the set here, because, like, what part of it did you say was in the studios?
All of the interiors.
It's absolutely huge. Like, when they're riding around, like, it's just nuts. It's almost exactly the same. It's crackers. So he sees the ghostly twins. Danny does twice. I think he sees them once when he's just in room, and he turns around and they're there. And then later on, when he's riding through the corridors, he just sees the girls. And then what do they say?
Why don't you come and play with us?
Come play with us forever and ever.
I always think of Space. Whenever you watch Space.
Yeah,
we've been cleaning forever and ever.
And ever.
Yeah.
Obviously, you see the girls, and then he's having visions, Danny, of them murdered with an axe, sort of just bloodied all over the. And his reaction is pretty terrifying, because he kind of just goes, "Oh!" and covers his eyes, which you think that is probably what a kid would do. Like, you remember being scared as a kid? You used to just
get
under the bed covers. Exactly.
Yeah. My last defense. Yeah.
Exactly. If you can't get through the bed covers, you know.
Like an armadillo. It was an armored bed cover.
Yeah. But, exactly.
Okay. So at some point, he goes into room 237, but we don't.
Yeah. So he's playing with his cars on the carpet, and then a ball rolls towards him. And when he looks up, obviously, no one's rolled it to him. He's like, what's going on? He goes, Mom, like, what the hell? And then he sees that room 237 is open, and he goes inside.
And then, so at some point, it cuts to Jack having the nightmare or something?
So he's like, he's been typing, but he's led on his desk, and he starts having a nightmare where he's kind of like, he's having one of them bloody nightmares again.
Yeah.
So obviously she comes, and I mean, this here now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is probably the best Jack Nicholson acting moment, I think. Because I was probably invested in this. And I've always kind of thought this is probably the best part of his...
Him talking about the dream,
and then obviously Danny walks in and is he sucking his thumb?
Yeah.
And his jumper's ripped, and he's got like all bruises on his neck. And obviously Wendy jumps to the conclusion. Well, you would. There's no one else here.
It's really well shot that. So like Jack is in the foreground, and you just see her slowly look up at Jack, and he's just sort of spacing out at them.
He's like spacing out, but he's like It's something about his expression that you're really just like, that is him, that is Jack in that moment, just thinking, what the hell is going on? Because he's just had a dream where he killed Wendy and Danny, and obviously he's terrified by that. And that's sort of like the last, these are like the shreds of his humanity, just for it all to see when he's when he's just completely spaced out and just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
I mean, that really gets to me. That's really
so
like...
So she's like, you did this. You used your strength on him.
Used your strength on him again and strangled him. Obviously, because there's a history of him obviously hurting Danny, unfortunately.
And also because he didn't say anything. Like
he doesn't say, no, I didn't. Because I think he's confused at this stage. He's like, did I?
Yeah.
Surely I didn't, but did I?
Yeah, so, I mean, just before that, they were talking on the bed. And he goes, I will never hurt you. It's like
He kisses him and kind of like hugs him. He says, come here a minute. And sort of, and even Danny sort of says about it. Do you love me or do you love us or something like that? Yeah. But yeah, not long after that, Jack ends up going to the gold room, which is the big sort of like ballroom. And he meets, there's a bartender in there called Lloyd. It was a sinister fellow, isn't he? Very mellow.
He treats him like he's seen him many times before, and he sort of tries to, he gets like very chatty, sort of tries to give him some money. And I think he said the drinks on the house or something. Yeah. Money's no good here.
But, well, I'd like to know who's buying my drinks. And he's like, just don't worry about it. Just somebody. Yeah. I mean, even that's creepy because you're like, who? What? What is. Yeah.
It's weird because I don't know if they're ghosts of people who died there or if it's some sort of, if it's the hotel.
Yeah, or if it's about. Or if it's it all in Jack's imagination. That's the thing. Sense. That's the beauty of this is like it's not especially said these are ghosts of people who died in a hotel. Ghosts it's like somehow the Overlook Hotel is creating these visions to sort of help Jack along in his descent into that madness.
Yeah.
Whether it's all in Jack's mind and you know, he's been struggling with ghosts or demons for a while. Hence why, obviously, recovering alcoholic as well. And now just being in this cabin fever-like environment, which is inducing cabin fever in him, is bringing this out in him.
Also, it's hard really to... the ancient Indian burial ground stuff doesn't really get brought up again. There's a couple of things I think about that. But I don't know, maybe something there. Maybe there's something more about that in the book. I don't know.
I think there is, but you know, it's been a long time. It's been over 10 years since I read the book, so it would be nice to go back and read it again. Yeah. But yeah, it's almost like it is very much something in the background of this film. It's not something as front and center as, yeah. So obviously he has a bourbon.
Yeah.
Complains about his marriage a little bit, sort of. Talks about everything that happened.
So at some point, Wendy says, there's a crazy woman in one of the rooms. Does she come into the bar and say?
I don't know if she comes into the bar. Maybe she does. She basically comes to Jack when he's on his own, and he's even a bit spaced out then.
Yeah.
And she says that basically Danny has said that a crazy woman in one of the rooms attempted to strangle him. Obviously, Jack's a bit like, what? I mean, we've been here
he
a
says,
month.
Are you off your head or something?
Are you off your goddamn rocker? Out of your goddamn mind? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but Jack obviously just says, "What room is it?" Oh, he's played 237, isn't it? So yeah. Jack goes to 237, and this scene here, there's a part now. This scene in the book, as far as I'm aware, is more. There's more than one occasion where he ventures into the room 237 to see the person in there.
Yeah,
and there's a real in the book. There's a very very specific moment, which is like one of the most haunting moments I think I've ever read in a book.
Yeah.
Which is when he kind of knows something's in there, but the door's closed, and it's just the way this scene sort of plays out in the book, where he just this description of like wet feet on a sort of wet rug,
yeah,
and it's just a wet bath mat. There's something about it which really
something's wet,
something's bloody wet in there,
yeah.
And obviously, by the time he goes in, you're like, oh Jesus, what's he gonna see? And obviously, he just sees a lovely. Lovely naked
broad.
Woman with a
broad.
And
they start smooching.
He seems pretty happy about it initially, Jack. He sort of looks a bit shocked, but then he kind of smiles as if to say,
yeah.
Hell right. Yeah. You may have possibly strangled and abused my son, but
yeah,
I mean, you look good naked, so I'm going to give you a lovely kiss. Yeah.
We're going to let you off. And as he's smooching, I think this might be my favorite sort of scary moment in the film. where he looks in the mirror and you see like bed sores or like which is sort of like rotten and molding and she's like aged and horrible. And then it also seems to like it seems to intercut with this woman's face coming out of the bath as well. It's really horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it is super creepy. So the same woman rising up out of the bath while the woman sort of wanders towards him laughing and he's walking back. But again, a wonderful, wonderful Jack Nicholson acting moment of him just like, he's very good in this stage before he goes full crazy.
Before he has the cheese sandwiches.
In these stages, he's really good at the what the fuck facial expression.
Yeah.
Like better than anyone I can think of. Just like really like, what the fuck is going on? Jesus.
Yeah.
So he kind of backs out the room, shuts the door, locks it.
And then when Wendy asks, so anything odd?
Any action?
Yeah.
Well, there was a bit. No, nothing. Well, there was a
window was open. Yeah.
Window was open. There was a gust of cold air coming in.
Leaky faucet and nothing really. Yeah.
So basically, and then they start. and there was a little ant and I killed that.
Yeah.
But then Jack and Wendy start arguing because Wendy's obviously saying she wants to take Danny to see a doctor. We both did that at the same time. Then we went, obviously Jack's a bit like, you basically want to sabotage this because I'm finally getting somewhere with something. You want to sabotage, and he sort of goes on about understand
about the book, or is he talking about like getting involved with a hotel?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it sounds like he's talking about that because he says about, do you not understand what I've got the thing I've got with my employers? There's a lot
more
in the
free
book.
Booze.
Free booze.
They just give me loads of whiskey. It's amazing.
there's a subplot in the book. Well, I say subplot, but it's sort of part of it, where the ghosts are kind of like trying to convince him that he should become the manager of this place. And he becomes convinced that, that's what he deserves. I deserve to become the manager. And it's almost like the things he's doing are to impress the higher ups. To show that he's good enough to become the manager. Which obviously isn't
we're
really
gonna have to read the book at some point soon.
Definitely there's a lot of good stuff. The ending's great as well. They argue over that a little bit, and then Jack sort of descending even further into this madness where all the ghosts are befriending him and getting into his brain box. He attends the gold room again, and now it's completely filled with people, like in some sort of like 1920s speakeasy environment, isn't it?
Yeah, they're all boogieing, they're all drinking. There's a guy with some advoca, some snowballs.
Oh,
I love advoca.
and he
sort of spills it on him and he goes, I'll get that right off. He starts takes him to the toilet, starts wiping him off. And he goes, hang on a sec, Mr. Grady, you killed your wife. Whatever he says.
You killed your wife and daughter.
Even if he was, I wouldn't say it like that. I'd be like, did you do something bad?
Did you kill your? He's like, you chopped him up into little bits, and he's a bit like, obviously it's weird because Jack essentially must know that he's seeing things, or that these are like, he's seeing someone who's dead, but he seems pretty like fine with it. He's a bit like,
by this point, you know, he's gone full on crazy. I think at this point, like his eyebrows, I'm sorry, they get taller. It's weird. I don't know. They did something at this point. They're like tickling the ceiling, like feather dusting the ceiling tiles. They're so like wild.
They basically Stanley Kubrick was like, right. So for this scene,
Stanley Kubrick has giant sort of owlish eyebrows as well.
Yeah. So basically, Jack Nicholson's like, how big do you want the eyebrows for this scene? He's like, medium. Say like a 6.5 out of 10. He's like, okay. Right, for this scene, I want 9 out of 10. Yeah. Oh god, I'm gonna have to really think about it.
Can we do a take? More eyebrows, Jack. More eyebrows.
More eyebrows. I'm doing the best I can. These are the most eyebrows I got. So obviously this is creepy as well. So while Grady's sort of in the bathroom with him cleaning them off, obviously he does kind of say that he has no recollection basically of killing his wife and kids. And then obviously there's a creepy bit where he sort of says to Jack, you are the caretaker. You've always been the caretaker. And that he must correct Wendy and Danny because they've been trying to bring an outside party into this situation.
Using a talent or something.
Using a talent. Yeah, so obviously Danny's not been expressively trying to communicate with Halloran, but Halloran's like gone to Florida to chill out, watching TV in his silken pajamas.
Obviously, he keeps he's got like naked pictures. Loads of like black women boobs. The cat said she thinks that that looks like his drag act. Like it looks like him with like,
oh,
like
yeah.
makeup and big fake boobs on.
That's why he's got the shine. That's why he's got the shine in. He's
throwing his voice. So he makes his way back. The thing about this, the Hadron thing is, he comes all the way from Florida. He like goes really far, and he doesn't really last very long when he does actually arrive.
Obviously, he calls the police and says, "Look, there's a family in the Overlook Hotel," and they're like, "Yeah, but I know. I get brand new information, man.
You got a mustache."
Yeah. Yeah, man. And he's like, so basically, can you check on the family or whatever? And they're like, well, the phone lines are down. And then he's got a reason to believe that they're perhaps in some sort of peril. So can you get hold of them some way? But then Halloran's like, fuck this, I'm getting on the first flight. I'm flying all the way back there. And I don't care what it takes, I'm going to get there. So obviously he's got some sort of connection with Danny via The Shining. So it's almost like Danny's not calling out to him, but he knows that Danny's in front.
At some point around here, Danny starts doing the Red Rum thing. Red Rum. His voice is quite good, isn't it? I don't know if they sort of did something digital with that or, ADR type stuff, but it's really good, really creepy.
Yeah, so, I mean, he goes into some horrible trances as well at some point. Does he go into some he goes into a horrible trance when Jack's with the woman, with the ghostly...
There's one point when he's just in bed and he's just like, his eyes are there and he's just like, it's like a really piercing whistle noise and he's like
dribbling and everything.
Yeah. I think he might be having some sort of like psychic fight with the house or something, because that's when he's trying to contact Aaron.
It's almost like these vibes from the house is kind of like overwhelming Danny in a way. So obviously, because he's got the shining, obviously for someone like Jack who hasn't got the shining, it's like it's subtly and subliminally works its way into his conscience and sort of like pushes him over that edge, takes something that already exists within him, which is this there's frustrations in his life, anger, obviously a great deal of anger, because obviously I guess he isn't as much as a success as he wants to be as a writer. And I also get the vibe that he kind of feels like Wendy and Danny are like holding him back a little bit, so I just need to do this and that. And obviously the Overlook Hotel takes hold of these frustrations and kind of like just pushes him
amplifies to the point, sort of thing.
Around about this point, obviously, we get Danny doing the Red Rum stuff and then referring to himself.
Around here, it starts to really go batshit, right? So this is when Wendy finds the manuscript and he just sees that it's just all the one sentence, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
I mean, he's written that a lot of times. I just keep thinking, when did he write that? Because he's been off doing a load of shit. He's been looking in room 237.
Boozing.
He's been boozing.
Boozing,
been
smooching.
Boozing,
dancing.
Smooching. Getting covered in Advoca. It's just all a bit nuts.
So as she's like looking through that, Jack comes back and he finds her. He's like, what do you think? What are you going to any notes, critiques? It's just all one word. He's like, what?
It's a bit predictive. It's a bit
between the lines, Wendy.
Between the lines, man.
So Wendy's like shaking, like constantly. This must be like the 127 take sort of part of the film. Because she's like, can't even hold her hand up. She's just like shaking. She needs some electrolytes or something. And she's got the baseball bat and she's like, no, Jack, go away. And then she slugs him one on the head.
Yeah, obviously there's some great stuff here where obviously she's backing up the sort of staircase and he's following after and he says, look, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your brains in. I'm going to bash your brains the fuck in. Give me the bat. I mean, these
and
bits.
She's
I'll just
like,
kinda...
bash the brains in.
Oh, yeah.
Good
idea. This just reminds me of the Simpsons episode, the Treehouse of Horror version they did. Give me the bat. All that
what
stuff.
What is it? What is it? No beer and no TV makes Homer go... crazy. Mind if I do.
And then she slugs Jack on the crust. He falls backwards down the stairs. And then she drags him into the kitchen, locks him in the pantry, struggles with the lock a little bit of tension there. She locks him in, and then obviously he starts trying to manipulate her to let him out. Come on, look, if you just let me out, I'll forget the whole damn thing ever happened.
And she's like, I'm going to take the snow cat down the sidewinder. They're going to take Danny to a doctor. And then he starts to say,
got a big surprise coming your way.
Yeah.
So at this point,
he's completely like lost his marbles. So Wendy's like trying to escape, but the snow cat has been, there's like just a little part that's been removed. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. No, he's taking a headlamp.
It's like, oh, I can't get it.
So he's taking like what, like the transmitter or something out of the radio. Boop!
I don't know. Yeah.
Something like that. And then taking someone out of the snow cat. So he swapped him over. She'll never think of that.
Yeah.
And then obviously while Jack's in the pantry, Grady appears unseen. I don't think we see him, do we? We just hear him.
Yeah.
Just hear his voice and he's basically like, oh, you've really been made an absolute twat off here, haven't you, Jack? What an absolute fool. I mean, Jack's eyebrows are at 11 out of 10 now. He's like, whoa! They're climbing up the wall. Oh! Yeah. And then Grady unlocks the door. So, I mean, in terms of this, what do you kind of feel? How did the door get unlocked? Was it like the actual ghost unlocking the door for him?
I think so. I think it's the house. I don't think there are ghosts. The way I kind of read it is...
So not like ghosts and spirits of actual people. Yeah, it's like it's the house. Like
the house is like, I don't know, just sort of manifests things as and when it needs
it. It's an evil entity. And when people die in the house, I think it like absorbs them.
Mm.
Some way it doesn't absorb them as they are, it absorbs them as some sort of like version of themselves. It absorbs them as like the, because then they don't seem to have their memories,
they don't seem to remember who they are.
It's almost like Grady has been absorbed and is now part of the house.
Yeah,
and he's there as an employee exactly. It's a bit like that.
So he gets out, he gets the axe. Oh, I think they're just in the bedroom at this point. And she's Danny's written Red Room on the door. And then Jack just rocks up, right, with the axe.
So obviously she sees that Red Rum reversed is murder. And she's like, ah!
Danny hasn't written Red Room right though. He's got one R one way and one R the other way.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's on purpose, but
I guess it's on purpose,
yeah.
Or it's making out he's just a kid. So he don't bloody know better, does he?
He doesn't know backwards words.
So yeah, Jack begins like smashing through the door. So in the book, it was like a croquet mallet, I think, or some sort of mallet.
Right, okay.
It wasn't an axe, but obviously I guess Stanley Kubrick was just thinking, an axe, probably a bit more sinister. Easier to smash a door with as well, I expect. You know, if we're going to do 127 takes or however many takes we're going to do with this door, six doors or something.
60 doors they got for it.
60 doors!
That's insane,
Like, where are you getting the doors?
Yeah.
Like you just get going down a B&Q and going, oh, look, probably a bit of a random request, but can I have 60 identical doors, please? Huh? We've only got 24.
I bet Jack Nicholson just enjoyed it, so he'd do it and he'd go, here's Jacob. Oh, you get to do it again. Oh,
well, that line was apparently ad-lib, wasn't it? The here's Johnny.
Was it right?
Yeah. So apparently it wasn't in the script or anything. And it's
Daniel.
I think it's a take on a quiz show catchphrase.
Yeah.
As I'm aware, so he must have smashed the doors with all those takes, and I think the bit where he puts his face through must have just been a one-time thing.
Yeah. So she shoves Danny out of the bathroom window.
Yep.
She tries to get through, and like her shoulders—I don't understand it because I know it's film, so you know, suspend your disbelief a little bit. But her shoulders get through fine, and I'm like, that's the widest part of your body. You can fit through that, Shelley.
She's got big,
being lazy.
She's got wide. Childbearing hips that you can't see because she's
perhaps,
you know.
I didn't see them. She's got like a stick figure thing going on. I was like, you can get out of that. You're just not trying.
You're just not trying. Yeah. So she kind of like knifes him, doesn't she, in the hand?
Yeah. And Danny disappears into the. When he comes back inside, he gets inside the kitchen cupboard, and Halloran turns up.
Yeah, so it's like, so Halloran, we've seen Halloran's journey, so he's kind of flown, then he was driving, and we see like a bloody overturned like 18-wheeler, so obviously we're made to think that the conditions out there are real bad. Then he borrows a snow cat. Where does he get that from, the old snow cat?
He borrows one, steals one.
Knocks on the door, can I just borrow this snow cat? No! Yeah. Thanks!
Yeah.
And poor old Halloran turns up at the Overlook Hotel, walks in. I mean, there's something creepy about like a really big space that's usually full of people suddenly empty in there.
But he's like there's shouting, something super... he's like, hello, I'm ready to be killed.
Yeah.
Like, just be quiet. Get some ninja on. Sneak around a little bit.
Yeah.
Get a lay of the land.
Get your ninja on. And obviously then Jack comes out of nowhere. Roar! big old scream and just.
He would have been fine if he wasn't scatting.
He gets axed and killed. Again, in the book, I think Halloran does get hurt at some point, but I think he survives and then ends up basically being part of the reason that Wendy and Danny survive, I think.
He brings a snow cat with him, so I guess he does something here.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So Jack chases Danny into the maze.
Yeah. And he's obviously he's reduced now to like a sort of burbling. What word am I thinking of? Where he's like, Danny, he's just like proper off his nut now, bumbling, just crazy person, obviously. And Wendy's wandering around the house now as well. She sees Halloran's body, doesn't she?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's how I scream.
And she sees loads of different things. So she sees like. Skeletons.
She sees the bear mask giving the blowjob to the guy in the
room. Yeah, well, allegedly. Yeah. They might have just been having a lovely conversation. That's weird. Yeah. Obviously, there's another ghost. She sees a guy with like a split down his head, toast, and says, isn't it a wonderful party? What a wonderful time, yes.
Yeah.
She's seeing all this shit. And then she does see the red. She sees the blood coming out of the elevator as well.
Yeah, I think it ends with her seeing the blood coming out of the elevator.
So obviously what we're made to see here is that like these things do exist. These things aren't just in Jack's mind. Danny's not seeing them because of The Shining. These things do exist in the realm of the Overlook Hotel.
Yeah.
And, you know, why she's now suddenly being allowed to see these things, it remains to be seen. But
So this is where I feel like this is the only thing I can think. Maybe the Native Indian burial ground thing has a thing here because Danny hides his footprints and he kind of does it in a way I imagine Native Americans used to do it. That's the only thing I can think. Maybe he's like used The Shining to talk to a Native American. I have no idea.
Maybe. Yeah. So he misleads him and then he hides, doesn't he, after that?
Yeah.
And basically escapes from the...
And the Jack Nicholson's death is funny. There's something about that cut straight to the frozen thing.
Yeah.
It just looks funny to me. I don't know. There's something silly about it.
You're just like, is that the Overlook Hotel? Does it not like reach out to the hedge maze? Because you think that somehow it wants him to
succeed.
It wants him to kill his family. So you'd think it'd somehow reach out to him while he's in the hedge maze and like go, look, mate, don't freeze to death. Yeah. Follow old Brady here. I'll lead you out or something like that. But the fact that we kind of get a cut immediately to suddenly Jack's
dead. I guess it gets Jack. It loses the other, but you know, it gets Jack because at the end we see the music plays and we see the photo from 1920s and he's in the photo now. He belongs to the house, been absorbed.
Yeah, he has been officially absorbed by the house. Yeah. Whether we're meant to believe that everyone in that photo is somebody who's been absorbed by the house, by the hotel, sorry, possibly, but that obviously brings full circle what Grady said, that you've always been the caretaker. But also, if he was the caretaker, would he be front and center in that picture? It's a big celebration for the caretaker.
maybe he got the manager job in the end. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe he did. He was finally the manager, even though he didn't kill Wendy and Danny.
And then it ends. Trivia. Oh, bollocks. I think I've already given you the answer to this. Maybe not. Maybe you forgot. Number one, Stephen King wrote the first draft of the film and Kubrick only read it once. True or false?
That's false. You said he didn't read it.
He didn't even read it. You've been listening. You have passed the test. The ball test. Number two, Kubrick wasn't present at all of the shooting. True or false?
True.
It's true because he refused to leave England. He hated leaving England for some reason. So all of the location shots were done of the hotel were done without him. Number three, in the German version of the film, the phrase "all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy" was translated to "don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today." True or false?
True.
True. Yeah, it's weird. Why would they not just do?
Yeah, why did not just do
all work and no play and make Jack and. a dull boy again. Why then they
are
just
are you fluent in German? Because I mean, from that display, I'd say 100% yes.
Okay, number four. Jack Nicholson wrote a scene in the film. Can you guess which scene it is?
Jack Nicholson wrote the He wrote a scene in the film. Did he write? It's not going to be obvious. Is it obvious?
It's a fairly performance heavy scene.
Did he write a scene in the bar with Lloyd?
No. Any other guesses?
Did he write the scene when he was trapped in the larder?
I'll give you a clue. He was trying to write a book or a play at some point, and he was distracted. So, and that gave him the idea for the scene.
So obviously the scene where Wendy interrupts him.
Yeah, he said...
he wrote that, didn't he? Oh, sweet.
He was writing a play or something. I think he was doing a few things. He was acting in a film and he was writing a play at night. And then I think he was trying for ages, and he said his wife or his girlfriend at the time came home, and he just lost his lid and just went crazier. And he's like, that should go in the film.
that should go in the film.
Yeah. That's okay. And number five, true or false, Empire Magazine placed this film at number one spot of their top 50 horror movies of all time. True or
That's
false?
That's true. It's true.
False. Okay. So we need to grade the film. We need to grade the film. What are you going to go with?
So as I said, another one of those which I always return to. But sort of in my sort of like top favorite horror films, I think it's always been there, but I don't think it's quite reached the heights of some of my favorites. There is just something about it, though, as I said, that as a horror film just seems to really work so well, and that atmosphere. Yeah. It's always the atmosphere of these films that really sort of get to me, and obviously that's why I enjoyed Hereditary recently as well. Sleepwalkers was great. Sleepwalkers was a straight 10 out of 10. But I'd go for an A with this. I probably wouldn't go for an A+, but an A I'm happy with.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. A, because it is a pretty much a perfect film. But then the A+s should really be reserved for things that are perfect films, but also resonate with you in a sort of like they just sort of speak to you in your own life and make you feel like I need to watch that film again.
I mean, this is my favorite Stanley Kubrick film, I'd say. Because it's not, again, Stanley Kubrick doesn't really do genre tropes even though it's of a genre, it's a horror film, it's a science fiction film. Mm. They're very much unique in the way they're presented, so.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that, So that's it. Next, I think we're going to take maybe a week or two off.
Maybe a couple of weeks off just to get our heads together. You know, I mean, we watched a lot of horror films. Maybe we need to watch some romance, you know, just to...
Yeah, the 50 best rom-coms.
The 50 best rom-coms. I mean, maybe have a detox. What will be the name of the 50 best rom-coms podcast?
Rom-com Rendezvous.
Yeah. I can always rely on you, Luke. That's what I like about you. I can always rely on you. Rom-com Rendezvous. Here we go.
So this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to the callback to Cowman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes and remember to subscribe. Thanks to our guests. I don't want to forget anyone, but we've had Dom, Johan, Andy has been on many times. We're going to do an episode where Andy's going to quiz us on all 50 episodes. So
that's true. That could perhaps be the next episode, but you know, we'll see how we get on. Otherwise, it's been a pleasure, Luke.
Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a right honourable dude.
Oh, a right honourable dude. Straight back at you, dude. Right back at you.
See you in a couple of weeks, and we'll
see you soon.
Rendezvous.
Well, rom-com rendezvous in a couple of weeks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.